This is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti, on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Community Radio, also simulcast on KEPW.org. I do try to bring you lectures and interviews from groups against state-sponsored corporatism. And during the deforestation disease, I'll be recording from, right now you're hearing the echo from my house, and I try to bring you stuff from a sustainability perspective. I've studied sustainability and experimented with it for about over 30 years, and so of course I couldn't get a job in that during the financial crisis because, and you shouldn't make money off of that anyway. So I've been driving truck, so that gives me a little bit of a balanced, semi-balanced perspective, give you the other side a little bit, try to help you use your brain, think for yourself, practice critical thinking. None of the opinions on this show are that of the management, the producers of KEPWLP, or Eugene Peaceworks et al. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media. Alright, coming up today, I got Mark Emery. He was the guy that went to jail for having a seed, and he's one of the reasons why pot is legal now, is people finally just got fed up with it and saw the he showed how ridiculous the laws were. And so this is an interview I did with him. I can't take credit for setting this interview up. The story is, I met this guy, Habeas, is a, what I call a, eschew anarchist because he eschews society. So I met him at Kill Radio / KPFK in LA, and we took a ride. I rented from the biodiesel rental car company that is now on Maui. They need your support right now on Maui, biodiesel rental car. And the Volkswagen Jetta that we had, I think it was a 2002. We did this in 2007. It got 50 miles to the gallon and had a 20-gallon tank. So you could almost make it all the way to Oregon from L.A. on one tank of gas. I think we stopped. And at that time in 2007, there was no biodiesel stations. So it was kind of a pioneer thing, no publicity or anything, but there was that place in Phoenix, Oregon that is still there to this day, and I believe Sequential Fuels, we fueled there. And then we went into Canada to interview Mark Emery. And me, like an idiot, I tried to bring pot into Canada, and you'll hear a little bit about that. Here's Mark Pot Guru Mark Emery. On KEBW, LP, 97.3, FM, Eugene Peace Works Community Radio, simulcast on KEBW.org, support independent media, tell your friends.
Plans, what can
and
you
one
do?
One goddamn letter.
Hey, we went to that place, 123A Hastings, yes. It was great.
That's fantastic, yeah.
I hear they're busy. I used to think it was just this little tiny private inn thing, and I'm told...
They hassled us. Well, they're hassling people. Not hassling, but they're like, hey, who sent you, blah, blah, blah. We just said, Mark Emery sent us. And they're like, oh, okay, come right on in.
Yeah. Why anybody couldn't just say that, I don't know. But because, you know, you just pick Mark Emery as and not have...
Yeah, that's what my friend said.
But you probably look like the kind of person that for some reason might end up talking to me.
Oh, cool.
I hope so. Yeah.
There you go.
You mentioned a few... Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm recording. Do you want to be in the shot?
I don't want to be in the shot, really, okay. No.
All right, I've got him.
Cool about that.
All right, I'm zoomed in on his head.
Okay, you mentioned yesterday the DEA, what was it called, the MTI, you mentioned something or other, where it's an extradition?
Oh, those are MLATs, Mutual Legal Assistance Treaties. That's the agreement the Americans get every Canadian, or rather every government in the world to sign. Of course, Great Britain, Canada, and many countries have signed this, Australia, so... What happens is that anyone who happens to do business with any American or any American undercover agent or American organization set to entrap you, et cetera, is liable to an extradition because you become part of a conspiracy to get some kind of substance to the U.S. So a ganja grower in Jamaica who sells to an American who gets caught is now part of some conspiracy, he can be extradited, or some guy in Britain who's financed a seed company in Canada can be extradited, and the guy in Canada who sells even a gram of weed to some American is part of a conspiracy, right? And so the thing is, the American punishments are medieval and all ideologically based. They're not based on being a victim, they're not based on a complaint. They're based on ideology. The government simply objects to this lifestyle, and any kind of e-commerce that supports that lifestyle becomes part of these medieval punishments of 10, 20, 30, 40 years in jail, even though one day in jail is shocking and inhumane. You know, we're ruining people's lives and the lives of their families by putting them in jail in America. See, that doesn't really happen here. You know, even if the most you can get for multiple murder is 25 years in Canada. And so in America, they'll sentence you to your next five lifetimes as if they somehow can get a hold on your reincarnated body in the next couple of lifetimes. They'll sentence you to 348 years in jail just to, I guess, to make the point.
Right.
You know, and so there is many, 16% of all people serving life without parole are there for drugs. Life without parole for stupid, for just drugs.
Now you're talking.
Drugs that everybody wants.
Yeah, you were talking about the seed situation here. I thought before you told me that it was actually legal to.
Well, you know, there's four seed stores on the block, two more down the road, you know, a couple hundred across Canada. To all intents and purposes, it is legal. But the problem is, it isn't legal in the letter of the law. And the reason I can be extradited is because we both, Canada and America, both have seeds as being illegal. They're not illegal in Europe or in Great Britain. So there's many, many seed shops there selling with impunity. Right, because in most places in the world, seeds of any kind aren't illegal.
So in Canada, is technically illegal to possess
The only review court that passed judgment on any convictions was the BC Court of Appeal, ruled that in the last seed case brought to court, Ian Hunter versus the Crown in Victoria, he got a $200 fine. He appealed the conviction, the Crown appealed the fine, the sentence, and the BC Court of Appeal upheld that the $200 was fair enough for something as unimportant, really, and trivial as a seed offense, which was nonetheless still indicated in the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act as not lawful if they were sold for marijuana use. You can get hemp seeds that are basically genetically the same as what I sold, but if you call them hemp seeds or say they're for eating, it's not a crime.
Now, as far as getting involved in this, you view yourself as some type of revolutionary, pushing the envelope on society.
It's because it's always been a bigger plan at large here. The whole reason I developed these entities, like the seed business, was to raise a lot of money to fund a kind of a revolutionary movement using peaceful democratic means around the world. And that's what we did. We gave away over $4 million to help develop infrastructures all across North America, like media, pot TV, magazines. You know, magazines, by the way, were illegal. What you're doing even now was illegal from 1987 to 1995 in Canada. Section 462.2 of the Criminal Code actually outlawed all books and magazines and video that in any way illustrated or glamorized or spoke about any illicit drug use, which meant all marijuana activism was illegal. Jack Rare's book was illegal when I started selling it in 1990. You couldn't get High Times, it had been barred from Canada. All copies of Grow Your Own Stone, a Canadian book, were seized in the warehouse by the RCMP in 1987. You couldn't get anything. And what we did is we started breaking that ban in 1990 because I was a bookseller by trade. And by 1995, it took me 5 years, we got into court and overturned the literature and video provision of 462.2. So now that same law is used to ban paraphernalia still, although we largely pushed that on the back burner of the courts too, because we got charged so much for selling bongs and pipes that eventually, like the obscenity cases I challenged in the early 90s, stopped the cops from actually charging people. So it had a good effect, didn't overturn the law, it stopped the cops from persecuting people because it got such bad publicity.
You mentioned that your magazine is banned in U.S. jails.
Yeah, federal. Well, it's banned in Australia, too. It's actually banned in Australia, Malaysia, Singapore, and Indonesia now, four countries in the world. And it's also banned in U.S. federal prisons, because as of December, I got notices from all these different states, because prisoners, a variety of ones, get free copies, and other relatives send them free subscriptions, so now they're barred. So we'd have to put a different cover on it.
What's the ostensible reason why they're banned?
Well, because our magazine, they say, is about criminal behavior. And I know when I was in jail, I couldn't get pictures of myself. The pictures that they seized in my mail were not naked women, by and large, although one of them had my wife with her underwear peeled a little too low, I guess. But they were all me smoking a joint. You could not have pictures of drug use, illicit drug use.
Now, we talked a little bit yesterday about what books you could get in jail, and I was wondering if you could recapitulate, what's the policy on getting what reading matter can come through?
Every prison has their own rules, let me assure you of that. Now, I was allowed to have kind of an unlimited number of books, because normally they don't let you own too much in the jail I was at, but books are such a rarely seen commodity anyway in most jails anymore. They kind of encourage you to have a lot of those if you can, right? But typically, a lot of places make you order them from Amazon.com or places like that, so that they can't have anything inserted in them. You can't have individuals send you books because there might be blotter acid on it or something like that. And I'm like, so that's what happens, right? Eventually people start getting LSD in prison because they're one of the pages. Yeah. So, you know, that gets stopped or something. Your powders are hard to see. So, you know, you have to order from Amazon.com. You can only have so much. There's a big bureaucracy to anything to do with the prison.
Is that uniquely for Canadian jails, or is that just every jail?
No. When I was in Saskatoon, friends could send you books.
Okay.
There was no LSD in the prison I was there, because there was too much poverty. Nobody could afford to have it.
My friend and I were talking about how, like, crackheads are never steal books out of your car.
No, there's no resale value. No, that's why I was a bookseller for 17 years, and that was a wonderful thing, is that people never broke in to steal books. Though I often caught shoplifters who would break into people's homes. Not so much people who broke into homes, and would try and sell me their CDs and stuff, right? That's what they would try in the old days, right? So you could always tell when some guy who's barely comprehensible in English is selling you, like, the collected works of Ludwig van Beethoven. You broke into some suburban home last night.
It's not his listening taste.
Yeah.
And, okay, I guess what we were talking about, you read Malcolm X in jail.
Yeah, that was a great thing. When I was in Saskatoon Correctional, I found the speeches of Malcolm X, which were great, very inspiring. It gave me a good little militant edge for 3 weeks and showed up in my diaries quite noticeably. And then I got a lot of Martin Luther King, so like at the beginning it was all Malcolm X, and at the end of my prison sentence there was all more Martin Luther King. So I had this back and forth debate within myself about the...
And we talked before, it's the Canadian people are backing you, by and large, you feel that there are not.
Well,
what's the
first of all,
consensus?
I can't say I ever get to meet all the Canadian people,
well,
but,
right,
and in my experience, I tend to meet the people who like me or agree with me or find favor with me because they introduce themselves to you.
Right.
People who don't agree, they probably stay
very
more
true.
Quiet. They just probably, you know.
Although
I've met three people since my extradition arrest a year and a half ago who clearly said they hoped I got extradited. Three in a year and a half. So I'd say that's a small amount. The fact that my wedding was the third most covered wedding in all of Canada this year, in the last year, said more to me than anything else. If you want to know what I think, they would not have put me on, like, there's the front page of the Metro, and it's all about my wedding. A whole day's newspaper was all about my wedding. And then it's page two of the Province was a massive picture of my wedding. There were big articles about my wedding in every paper from the Globe, all across Canada. Fox News talked about my wedding. The thing is, if I was a really bad person, I don't think they would have covered it, because only two weddings were more covered than mine for the whole year, Avril Lavigne and Pam Anderson. And they're two of the three most famous women in Canada, the other one being Celine Dion.
Well, the question came up to me is I saw a pretty favorable interview with you on CBC, wasn't there? Canadian News.
Yeah, of course. Well, there always is. In fact, there's a movie coming out called The Prince of Pot Story, Seeds of Sedition, and it's in about in May, I think. And it's an hour-long movie. There'll be a lot of different things.
So you're actually pretty... I heard that lawyers are actually volunteering to pay your legal fees.
Oh, no, there's none of that. They're all $300. My lawyers give me a break, $80 and $100 an hour, but John Conroy's still at $300 an hour.
So that's not... So, but what I read was that in exchange for the movie, they're offering to pay your legal fees. Is that not correct?
No, the movie, the CBC movie, didn't pay a dime. And the other one with, what's his name? Larry... He offered to contribute some money, but that hasn't materialized.
So
that was a year ago. And the problem
is
they want exclusivity, so then the CBC guy got in there, so they got to wait till his project's on. And so we've had $44,000 in contributions from the public in a year and a half, and that all went right to the lawyers.
How do you get along with the other marijuana magazines, like High Times and this?
Well,
Pits?
I don't like High Times, but I guess you can get along okay. But I don't like them. I don't respect them as a magazine. Skunk is a sleazy, trashy magazine, but it's better than not being there. It still provides some information.
Do you think that High Times is sort of a pot as pussy kind of a thing, like a men's magazine with its...
No,
sort of like
I think it's for an under 20-year-old crowd of young men who are easily duped into buying the fake buds that they're advertising properly. And if you'll notice, their centerfolds are becoming more like their fake bud ads. They're starting to spray artificial color and put artificial light on the buds to make them look more like the fake buds that take up pages and pages of advertising in High Times. So they simultaneously exploit the culture, defraud the culture, and offer bogus ethics, right? So I think High Times is an abomination. I'll be glad when it's no longer published.
Okay. Now, have you felt that way about it since its inception, or do you think it's...
No, I was interviewed in High Times. It's right behind me there. And that's from July 1992. So that's 15 years ago, High Times interviewed me as being an up-and-coming,
nice glasses,
up-and-coming, activist, and that does really cover my first couple of years. I don't even an activist.
Do you feel
years,
they're supportive of your? Are they supportive of your plight or your case? I should say.
Well, actually, High Times, I guess, is reasonably supportive. Though that's how I can't judge that organization based on that.
Okay.
Though and Skunk Heads, they've all been supportive. In fact, there hasn't been any media within the movement that hasn't been supportive of that. But to me, High Times just shouldn't be in New York City. It should be in Seattle. It should be in San Francisco. Being in New York City is ridiculous for a marijuana magazine. That's the most prohibitionist of all the major cities in America. So you can't develop the right vibe there, and that's the problem.
I think there should be a Washington, D.C. is where they belong.
Well, that's
If you're okay with this, I'll take it forward to Scan Ready. I'll color her in, get the right hockey
colors.
Yeah,
that's so cool.
Our outfits are going to be, of course, green on green. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's really
good. They got Brandon in here.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah, you can almost tell that Brandon's done the blue line to Greg. Greg's done the assist on the goal.
Yeah, no, that's so neat. I love that.
Okay, good. Then
I'm
going to
have a pass with being brought in.
This is a continuation of, we had some border problems when we came in. They confiscated some herb on us.
Oh, yeah, well, they'll do that.
And then they sent us back, and we decided,
you only got banned for that one moment.
Well, the audacity, we'll just do it again. So we went
and
back.
They laughed at us because he says I'm bringing sand to the desert. Because I'm an idiot trying to bring pot in here.
Oh, well, you'll find it quick enough.
Yeah.
We'll go to 123A.
He got ripped off yesterday.
Off of the park,
They tried to rip you off? That's near.
No, I gave him my money, and he went off.
Oh, you don't need to do that. Go to 123A West Hastings.
That was great. We already did.
Oh, you already
they took really good care of us.
Okay, well, then you know where to go when you're next in town.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess
one question?
What was the selection they had over there?
It's great. Oh.
How many different kinds? Is
five.
Too many to even.
Four different types of hats.
Yeah, okay, that's what I saw. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, yeah, what's all the selection?
I actually asked one of them to come over here if a famous person comes by and wants to see a selection, right? I'm going, well. So they often send David Mama Levine over. That guy can bring 20 different kinds. It fucking blows me away.
What's the psilocybin law? I mean, can we just carry psilocybin around? I mean, can we...
Well, that's just mushrooms, so...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Not many people... They're not cops, really, aren't going to be looking for people.
Can you do mushrooms here?
Can I...
Upstairs?
No, because you'll be out for some time, and you have to... There's an hour limit there. Also, mushrooms, you can... I mean, I've taken mushrooms and never had a negative experience, but I've cried for 4 hours in a row, so... You don't want to have emotional outbursts like that. You know, probably know what you're doing. You should go home or out in your backyard to do mushrooms.
The mushrooms
here will all be psilocybin cubensis, which are pretty powerful. So.
Oh yeah.
It was good.
Yesterday.
Can I ask one question if you're done? You mentioned about the prohibition in of alcohol. Why were we able to circumvent the American Puritan ethic with alcohol, but we're not able to do that with pot? There must be something more, like nylon.
Alcohol is indigenous to Western European culture. And you got to understand that Western European culture has been dominant culture. Like when you look at the great holocausts of our time, from the Jewish pogroms of 500 years and then the Nazi period, or you look at the native decimation in North America, or the bringing over the slaves and enslaving up to 10 million blacks, or the witches of Europe that were killed during the Inquisition. The people who are perpetrating these crimes are all Christian Europeans, and they're perpetuating them on the non-Christian Europeans, whether it's the blacks or the natives or the Jews or the female witches, right, the non-believers, the heretics, right? So you can see a very systematic, and George Bush is a descendant of this kind of dominator complex that white Europeans have had and still have in some parts of the world. So we're stuck with that. But more importantly, the pot people are always the critical thinkers. They don't accept dogma, certainly not the Christian dogma. And they don't accept other dogmas, political dogma. They don't accept the book of the Bible, the book of the Quran, the book of the law. All these one-book beliefs that are intolerant and hard and inflexible. We're not into that. We're into one love, acceptance, whether you're gay, transgender, black, white, smoking, women, men. It's all okay. If you smoke herb, everything is neutral, right? So we see that upstairs in the vapor lab.
Whereas alcohol, it isn't that mentality at all that goes with alcohol.
See, I also explain to young people, pot will never make you do anything against your moral code, like alcohol or cocaine or many things will make you do, right? From Rohypnol to any number of things will either incapacitate you or change the actual way you view the world around you. Because if you're addicted or you're desperate or you're alcoholic, well, that's not going to happen. No women ever have sex on pot they wouldn't have normally had with someone. No people do rob banks. No people break their never heard of it or seen it where somebody said, I smoked pot and I became a completely different person. doesn't have, I became a better person, a more relaxed person. I became different in that sense, but not, I went against my fundamental moral beliefs. Never heard it.
Well, and alcohol was more of a part of colonial culture than pot, but pot was still, hemp was still part of colonial culture.
It is, not, as long as it wasn't being smoked, it was okay.
They weren't smoking.
Although it's suspected that when you look at Washington, George Washington, the first president of the United States, was the largest landowner in America, had more hemp growing on his property than any other plantation in the United States, especially, of course, in Virginia, where largely he was. And he wrote extensively about it. They say George, that Thomas Jefferson did too, but there's really not that much Jefferson wrote about hemp when he gets down to it.
Well, he snuck the seeds in from France.
It's thought that Washington might be growing a smokable variety. He always said, pay attention to the India hemp, and that's thought to be the serious smokable cannabis, along with his other stuff. And consequently, he was not anxious to become president. He liked being just a wealthy landowner, and he wasn't, you know, so he seemed like a pot guy. Early George Washington's got kind of a pot ethos or ethos around him that I find interesting. Jefferson also, but...
Well, so you don't see the nylon industry or the pot...
No, I don't think that's
any of that.
I've read that,
no.
To me, it's all based in racism. In the 1920s, for the first time ever, because of the post-World War change, and whenever people go through a terrible trauma like the world influenza epidemic of 1918-19, or the World War I, where we're talking millions of people, you know, people in every community are affected by deaths. After that, there's a cathartic period where people just want to party and forget all the bad times, and usually there's a real population explosion, a change. Well, in the 1920s, you had the jazz era, you had increasing prosperity, you had advancements in radio and music, most importantly in phonographs, and the spread of musical thing. Now, of course, we have everything in the Western civilization's musical canon in something the shape of a credit card in this day and age. But, you know, in the 1920s, it was still pretty cool.
There's
phonographs and live bands. And more importantly, black musicians, for the first time, were all over America and all the large cities playing this new music called jazz, which young white people were very attracted to. Young white women were very attracted. And so when they saw these handsome young black men in their fine suits playing this music, well, you know how women are around music. They, you know, every musician I ever saw, no matter how bad, has got at least one woman drooling over him in the music hall, right? He only needs one. But so the thing is, you had women falling in love with black guys, and then they got pregnant. And, you know, they're smoking pot because the only people who ever had weed in the 20s were black musicians in the large inner cities, right? And in Delta towns and like St. Louis or New Orleans or places like that where you're going to get dock workers bringing Mexican weed into a port. So what happens is these girls, women, they get pregnant, and there's no way in the 1920s and 30s you can tell your parents, oh, yeah, I agreed to have sex with a black man after he took a lot of drugs, and now I'm going to have a black baby. No way. You say I was drugged and raped if you want to be taken back, and that would be uniformly always the case, because you know it is. I mean, even nowadays, it's, you know, if you're Jewish, you better come home with a Jewish, you know, partner. If you're black, parents want kids to be, you know, in the same ethnic, racial group as their parents are. Kids are often more rebellious in that. Love doesn't really have that kind of, you know, Jim Crow attitude, right? Like that tradition does, right? So, you know, these girls would just have to say they were drugged and raped. And so if that musician tried to come to town, they'd try and lynch that guy, right? Next thing, a lot of times a musician would get back a year later and somebody's out to get him. He had no reason why until he figures, uh-oh, that last woman I was with, right? You know, and in those days, too, when they sent women off to get abortions, it was a dark, dirty thing, and the woman would, like, disappear for a year or two, and it's crazy stuff like that. Or have the baby, give it up, and then come back. I mean, all sorts of reprehensible shame and embarrassment
the
involved.
The Pocahontas abortion.
And potential violence to the black musician. So, you know, not an easy livelihood being a pioneering black jazz musician going from community to community, because... What's not to like about, you know, these white women coming to see you, and then all of a sudden you've unleashed a torrent of...
And to this day, they're holding that mentality, though, that memory of...
For sure, yeah.
Is holding
Listen, I saw that very effectively in the movie Trafficking, where you see the white girl going to have sex with the black guy. And as he goes, you can just... Somehow you just know he's got this big, huge... Right, and nothing is more threatening to a white family
the
and
wasp,
their virginal daughter to think some big black is going to penetrate their daughter's white pearly gates. I mean, that just makes men go crazy.
And that movie was very popular.
And because, you know, when they lynched a black person, they cut off his genitals and set him on fire. So it was very much conscious that...
Penis envy.
It was penis envy, because you got this big... If you use it, this is what happens to you, right? So don't leave your own race, right? So very clear messages. That's where Billie Holiday's Strange Fruit comes from. And there's even postcards you can buy on eBay that were published until the 40s even, of lynchings throughout America. The U.S. Postal Service only stopped delivering them in 1908.
Refusing. All right, well, that sounds, it's been a good interview.
Great. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, pick up the new activist issue, Cannabis Culture Magazine. Yeah. We're really proud of it.
Put some money in your legal fee pot.
Yeah, it's, thanks.
Well, you guys, I'm going to buy a shirt. You get proceeds from the shirts here? And
yeah, oh yeah. Okay, yeah. Anything you spend.
You saw Sabia Divinorum here?
Yeah, yeah, that's in the urban shop.
Okay, yeah.
But don't bring it across the border.
I don't know what the, it's really, there's no real sort of a frontier to illegal.
You've been listening to an interview with Mark Emery, also known as the Prince of Pot, and the main reason we've made so much progress in legalizing marijuana. Interview with in Vancouver in 2007 with Habeas and myself. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Community Radio, also simulcast on KEPW.org. Please support independent media.
Brooks on keyboards and violin. It's Alan Holdsworth on guitar. Bill Buford on drums. And myself, John Whitten. Thanks very much indeed. Good night. Thank you.
they got bullets in their heads. The prophets are police, the judges, the feds. Then what's it worth? Keep your people calm. They don't even have to change when he spoke out of Vietnam. Turn the power to the have-nots, and they take the shot.
Generation after generation after generation after generation.